My name is Dee, and I am a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the Three Leg Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sebastian, Florida. I come to you tonight from Cody, Wyoming, as I've been traveling. I left Florida May 23rd. I'll be back at the end of September in Sanibel for our area assembly. I have a sponsor, a Three Legacy sponsor, that sponsors in all 36 spiritual principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I do the same with other women. It's a privilege. My sobriety date is March 18th, 2013. That is not my first sobriety date. I hope that that'll be my last sobriety date if I continue to do, today, and tomorrow, right? What I've been doing, what suggestions, if you will, but directions for this little brat. So, I'm currently working steps 10, 11, and 12. And Dr. Bob and the good old timers is what Kevin had asked me to share on. And it was kind of funny because as controlling as I can be, ha, ha, ha. I wanted AA comes of age. But when he said Dr. Bob and the good old timers, I just kind of chuckled and laughed. He said, I like Bob. And I said, I like Bill. So I say that joking as an opening because, you know, my home group studies the literature. We've gone through a language of the heart. We're now in AA comes of age on Tuesday nights at 6 p.m. I mean, I'm sorry. We used to meet on Tuesday nights. We're now on Monday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. And on Wednesday nights, we study our pamphlets. And you don't find too many of those type of meetings, if you will, that stay in the history books of Alcoholics Anonymous. We will be going into Dr. Bob after we finish AA Comes of Age. And right now we're in questions and answers on sponsorship. I mean, not sponsorship, but frequently asked questions on Wednesday nights. So anyways, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, there's a bunch of pieces in here that I really love. And what Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers is about is exactly what it sounds like. It is about Dr. Bob, a little more intimate look into Dr. Bob and his experience from that angle. And I'll tell you that, again, my contempt prior to investigation, before I got into some of our history studies, I thought, what does that have to do with me, right? That has nothing to do with me and my recovery. And because I was quite selfish, I thought I was such a giver, and I found out maybe I wasn't as much as I thought. I found out that I was looking out for myself and what it had to do with me and not about my responsibility to know where we've been and what our co-founders have been through in order for this to continue to be here, as well as us, you know, all of us, or another Dr. Bob and another Dr. Bill, you know, in an effort to be here for the future generations. What are we going to do to give back to this life-giving, you know, movement, if you will, right? Faceless, nameless movement that continues to be here and help alcoholics, right, through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps. And so Dr. Bob, just to give you a quick little clip into this. So Dr. Bob and the good old timers, Alcoholics Anonymous, by its very nature, could not have been founded by one person. Its essence is sharing. Therefore, Bill W. and Dr. Bob are always referred to within the fellowship as the co-founders. So far among the majority of AA members, the Ohio surgeon has been less well known than his partner. He died in 1950 when AA was only 15 years old. But his influence on the whole AA program is permanent and profound. And no, I'm not going to read to you this whole time, but I'm just giving you a brief idea of what we're talking about before I go spinning through the highlights that I have in the book. This book attempts to give a portrait of Dr. Bob as full scale and balanced, a word that I don't know too well, as possible, for the most part, in the words of those who knew him personally. And so it's really cool when you go through this and you'll hear from Smitty, you'll hear from Sue, you'll hear, you know, some recounts of stories that he has shared over the years. And I thought that was intimate. That was nice. So it says, so in the words of those who knew him personally, the youngster who grew up in Vermont of the late 19th century became a hard drinking college boy, then a medical student fighting the onset of his own alcoholism, a respected physician, a loving but increasingly unreliable family man, and at last a desperately ill drunk, without hope until he met a stockbroker from New York, Bill W., who urgently needed a fellow alcoholic to help him maintain his own sobriety. So with that, the reason I read that was to take you to one of my first favorite highlights in this book, and that is on page 68. And you don't need me to read the table of contents to you, but you can get a more of a rough idea of what, you know, what's in these chapters by looking at that table of contents and choosing to go through the whole book or bits and pieces, however you choose. But on page 68, one of my favorite things is why we're here. And it just said that in the beginning, what I just read. It says, in AA comes of age, on page 68, second paragraph, In AA Comes of Age, written about 20 years later, after Bill had analyzed the event in the light of subsequent experience, he said that he went very slowly on the fireworks of religious experience. And they're talking about his experience with Bob, because when Bill, at 5.5 months sober, carries the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, right, to Bob. Bob had been in the Oxford group for 2.5 years, roughly, trying to get sober, but going to the Oxford group drinking and, you know, not able to maintain sobriety. So for me, this page, in my experience, I have written on the side of this page, SOP, for singleness of purpose, because this is going to describe his first encounter, Bill and Bob together. So, and it speaks to the singleness of purpose, the magic of me too, right? In our tradition five, if you will. So it says, so he said that he went very slowly on the fireworks of religious experience. First, he talked about his own case until Bob got a good identification with me. Then, as Dr. William D. Soakworth had urged, Bill hammered home the physical aspects of the disease, the verdict of the inevitable annihilation. This, Bill felt, brought about in Dr. Bob an ego deflation that triggered him into a new life. And I love that discussion of trigger of ego deflation, because you can also read more in depth about that in another piece of our literature in AA Comes of Age, page 249 to page 251. And it talks about that in Harry Tebow talks about that from the physical aspect of what that ego deflation and a constant surrender in order to keep that ego deflated, if you're interested. So describing their talk as a completely mutual, and mutual is in italicized, mutual thing, Bill said, I had quit preaching. I knew that I needed this alcoholic as much as he needed me. This was it. And again, italicized. And this mutual give and take is at the very heart of all of AA's 12-step work today. So what is our message? Our message is the 12 steps. That is our only message, right? To carry this message to another alcoholic who still suffers. And that's what Bill did that day for Bob. And that's why we're here tonight, because that's my message that I get to share and carry with other women as well in my sobriety. In my 12 step is another woman's first step. And that's what it was that night for Bill and Bob, that day for Bill and Bob. In Alcoholics Anonymous, published almost exactly 4 years after their first meeting, Dr. Bob noted that Bill was a man who had been cured by the very means I had been trying to employ. That is to say, the spiritual approach. He gave me information about the subject of alcoholism, which was undoubtedly helpful, of far more importance. And here's the part, folks, that for me is the nail in the coffin that reels it home. Again, all italicized. Of far more importance, he continued, was the fact that he was the first living human with whom I had ever talked who knew what he was talking about in regard to alcoholism from actual experience. In other words, he talked my language. He knew all the answers, and certainly not because he had picked them up in misreading. Whatever Bill said, and in the course of some 5 hours, 5 hours, right? Didn't he say he was only going to give him 15 minutes? 5 hours of conversation, he must have thrown in everything he ever knew or thought or guessed about alcoholism, and told the long version of his story to boot. Bob stopped drinking immediately. And one of the things, this is the piece I love the most, because again, it speaks to that singleness of purpose and the magic of me too. This paragraph right here on the top of 69, it says, Bill seemed to place more emphasis on what he was saying than on the fact that it was himself, he himself saying it. While Bob indicated that although it was helpful, he had heard most of it before. And I'm going to pause there for a moment, because I kind of liken that to people telling me that are non-alcoholics, as you know, that I need to quit drinking. And any time that a non-alcoholic told me I needed to quit drinking, they just didn't understand, because they weren't one of me. They didn't get it. Self-knowledge wasn't key. And I, no frothy emotional appeal, no matter how much I love my kids, I love them just as much today as I loved them when I was before I got here. But try telling a non-alcoholic what it's like to be us and not be able to stop. And so that was what the difference was here, because they both spoke the language, and that's what he's saying. So he said, important to him was the fact that another alcoholic, and it says that in italicized, was telling him, if William James, Carl Jung, and Dr. Soakworth, along with Frank Buchman and all the members of the Oxford group had been doing the talking that night, well, that doesn't say that night, I threw that in there, had been doing the talking, it would have been just another lecture. So I stopped there, because I love that. Again, it's a non-alcoholic, as smart as they are, as wonderful as they are, but it just wasn't another alcoholic. And that, I mean, seconds and inches as to where we would have been versus where we are today. And so the last part of that, Sue remembered that she kept expecting her parents home almost any minute that Sunday evening, but they didn't come home until almost midnight. When they did return, her father seemed more at ease than he had been. Although he still wasn't in good shape, he apparently looked better all around. He was quite enthused about his talk with you, she told Bill. I can remember that. He didn't go into it a whole lot, but I do remember Dad saying that you seemed to hit it off with him more because you both had the same thing. He realized that it wasn't just him. And this is the line that I have underlined, one of the few, but she said, he told me that members of the Oxford group just didn't have the same type of problem. So what we're talking about, right, is when they get into doing a bunch of other things in the multi-purpose activities, and we're not keeping the focus on our singleness of purpose. So I can't help but think that that must have been really, really important, because if it didn't stick that night, then where would we be? And if it doesn't stick for the next alcoholic that walks in that door and doesn't hear what we are and what we are not, right, then versus what we are not, then they may not come back either, you know. And I have a sponsee that I'm currently sponsoring that's at 80 days sober, and she's on her fourth step, and she's that was one of the problems. She wasn't hearing the message of Alcoholics Anonymous in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she was ready to walk out and not come back. So I'm glad she's with us, just from my own experience. So anyway, I thought this is a cute little piece too on page 74. And hey, by the way, I forgot my timer. Go figure. So just interrupt me, Kevin, because I'm good like that. I T-bone others and I know how to T-bone. It's all good. Be T-boned. So on page 74, it's 1, 2, 3, third paragraph down, 74. It says, I just thought this was cute, looking back at the kind of stuff that they did, because we're looking at our founders here. And this is about Dr. Bob. It says, that was for the operation, Bill explained. Upon Dr. Bob's return, they had discovered that he was due to perform surgery 3 days later. It was a worrisome thing because if he was too drunk, he couldn't do it. And if he was too sober, he would be too jittery. So we had to load him up with this combination of tomato juice and sauerkraut and Karo corn syrup. The idea was to supply him with enough vitamins from the tomatoes and sauerkraut and energy from the corn syrup. That was the theory we had. We also gave him some beer too, some beer to steady his nerves. And so I'm only popping some pieces out there to kind of entice you, if you haven't read the book before, to be able to pick up the book and go through it, because it's interesting to see what some of the things that they've gone through. You know, they definitely hammered out through anvils of experience, you know, before us, some of these things that we don't have to do if we choose not to, if we choose to take a look at where they've been in order to know where we're going. I was talking about that with someone else before the meeting. Another line I love on page 83 in the first paragraph, it says, all basics of our program that have not changed to this day. And again, you can read more into that, you know, piece of that paragraph. I found it pretty interesting to me. One of the bigger pieces I'd like to talk about so that I don't run out of too much time, because there's a lot in here. But I found it interesting how we've kind of morphed from some of the reading of our literature, and there's somebody else on here that's dove deep into the history more than I, for sure. I won't claim to be any expert, but just my perception from what I've read, you know, from my angle. It seems that we used to use the word religion a lot. We used to use, and this is not to be divided, not to be ugly or anything, because with my higher power, if I'm divided from you, I'm divided from God. However, what I have found is that it seems like we used to use the word religion an awful lot in our writing, and today we have kind of morphed more towards using that word spirituality. So I could see how some people, depending on where you're at in sobriety, it might be a distaste. It might be something hard to stomach, might not, it might prevent you, right? It might be contempt prior to investigation without giving it a chance, right? You know, and just like looking at the whole picture, the whole paragraph, the whole chapter, not just one sentence. So that's just a thought, because at first I remember that's who I was when it came to the traditions and when it came to a lot of our history. So with that said, I'd like to take you to something I thought quite interesting, because we can see that there's controversy around it today in AA as well. So I thought I'd take you to some of that controversial stuff, right? Singleness of purpose can sometimes feel like that when we're talking about that with people that don't know the traditions. And also when we're talking about, you know, this spiritual quest, if you look on page 306, that's where it starts. But I found it really interesting. There's a lot of highlights I have in that chapter, and I thought it was really cool because Bob was a seeker. I mean, as much as when Bill and Bob met, and again, my perception, here's Bill younger in sobriety, younger in age, both in sobriety and belly button than Bob. And yet less maybe advanced from the surface it looks than Anne and Bob, right? Being more religious, if you will, you know, than Bill. And yet, what are the odds, right, that he would even listen and open his mind to this? I don't want to call Bill a young punk, but, you know, some younger guy that's young in sobriety, you know, he's young in age. And what do you know about this God thing? You know what I mean? So, you know, thanks to Anne and Bob taking the lead, you know what I mean? Back then, you know, there was where a lot more of this religious, if you will, was introduced until, of course, we see Bill dabbling more into that seeker part of it. And again, this is with all our history that kind of comes forward. So as you read in a lot, you know, in our history stories, so in our history books. But on page 308, inside this chapter that I'm talking about, I will have little hearts by this. It says, the first paragraph on 308, it says, we're all after the same thing, and that's happiness. We want peace of mind. The trouble with us alcoholics was this. We demanded that the world give us happiness and peace of mind in just the particular way we wanted it. We wanted to get it by the alcohol route. And we weren't successful. But when we take time to find out some of the spiritual laws and familiarize ourselves with them, so you got to be careful. You see that word law, that's it. You're done reading paragraph. Just joking. And familiarize ourselves with them and put them into practice, then we do get happiness and peace of mind. There seem to be some rules. Uh-oh, there's another trigger, just joking, that we have to follow. But happiness and peace of mind are always here, open and free to anyone. And I just love that. So that's why I've got hearts there. But here's another piece I love, because a lot of people start talking about, you know, Sermon on the Mount, you know, I could go on. Another one that I like is The Greatest Thing in the World, you know, you know, there's lots of different readings, you know, and then of course you guys, you know, have heard about the varieties of religious experience and so forth and so on. So if you want to read about some of those other books, in addition to the books of Alcoholics Anonymous that was used before the books of Alcoholics Anonymous were published, right, before our conference, before we had a literature, et cetera, before we had the big book even, then you can look on page 310, and in that first and second paragraph there, it gets into the details of it. You know, some of the advice, if you will, that they used to give, you know, to some of the newcomers, and it goes on into page 311. But what I love, one point that I want to point out, it says, but he was pretty careful, and they're talking about Bob now, because he's talking about all kinds of stuff, Upper Room and Sermon on the Mount. But Bob went on to explore every type of philosophy and religion, but he was pretty careful about recommending those to people for fear it might be disturbing, Dorothy added. If people asked, he'd tell them, but he didn't push books at people. And I love that, you know, so even that, just looking at that, he didn't push books at people. It was an intimate thing that he shared, you know, for those that asked. And another thing I thought quite interesting, I have a bunch of question marks in here on page, the bottom of page 311 and 312, because you can read about some interesting stuff, because it says right here, I'm going to read one just to entice you. It says, I remember another time Doc, Ann, and I were sitting in the living room over at Roland's house one Sunday afternoon. Doc was reading the paper. Ann was sitting smoking cigarettes. Dorothy was out in the kitchen getting dinner, and Roland was sitting in a chair. All of a sudden, Anne started rolling her eyes, trying to get my attention. I looked in that direction, and so help me God, Roland had created the illusion of a beard on his chin. I didn't believe what I was seeing. When he saw that I was looking, he let it disappear. Doc just sat there and laughed. He believed that was the funniest thing he had ever seen. A lot of us believed in the spiritual thing, said Clarence S. We'd go to Roland's on a Sunday night. He'd call in the spirits. It got spooky after a while, beyond what we should be monkeying around with. Doc backed off too. So again, I find it very interesting, because we get into, you know, so much of the denominational side of things, but just to see that also in their own journey, just whether right, wrong, indifferent, it doesn't matter whether I agree, disagree, it doesn't matter. But just looking at this history of the seeking and of the, you know, falling down, getting back up, and the exploration of this, God, you know, and of this alcoholism and AA, you know, and how to stay sober and how to help each other. And so, anyway, I thought that was interesting. And 314 at the end also goes on with some more interesting stuff. But there is just a lot of stuff in here. I went through this book with one of my service mentors before I made changes in my service sponsorship line. And she's somebody that I love I respect so much. She's a past delegate, and she's also got 54 years of sobriety. And that doesn't make her wonderful, what I just said, because of her service or because of her length of sobriety. What makes her wonderful is that she's still working with women in the first legacy of recovery at 9:30 at night when I'm going to bed, and she's like 82 now, I think. I hope I'm not adding an extra year. But the reason I say that is I spend time with her, you know, every Thursday for the last couple of years, reading in our history books of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Dr. Bob was one of them that I have a lot of these notes from reading with her. And I remember we would read through this together. And the reason I'm sharing this with you is because no matter how old your sobriety is or how young your sobriety is, there is nothing but a benefit that I feel that it can do, because it seemed for me to ground my sobriety and my appreciation. And also it took those traditions and the history and all of it from the head to the heart, you know, it had that shift in movement for me. And then, so I look at this and I start to have just a knowledgeable experience. But then when I start to be able to look at their experiences and then have my own experiences, like I shared about my sponsee, et cetera, then it starts to really be mine. And it starts to be more of that language of the heart embedded in why we're still here and why we come back to be of service to others. And that's service for the love of Alcoholics Anonymous, not service for my ego, right? So anyways, and there is definitely so much more I have in here. I was looking at that with someone else that asked me about that piece not too long ago. Here's another cute one, and it's on the back page, well, it's towards the end, it's page 334. Somebody asks him, do you have to go to all these meetings? Why don't you stay home and conserve your strength? Dr. Bob considered the question for a time, then said, the first reason is that this way is working so well. Why should I take a chance on any other way? The second reason is that I don't want to deprive myself of the privilege of meeting, greeting, and visiting with fellow alcoholics. It is a pleasure to me. And the third reason is the most important. I belong at that meeting for the sake of the new man or woman who might walk through that door. I am living proof that AA will work as long as I work AA. And I owe it to the new person to be there. I am the living example. Didn't know I'd get choked up on that one, because again, I'm thinking of that sponsee, and I think I saw her sign on. But, you know, these are the reasons, you know, again, that magic of me too, and the reason of giving back, that this thing continues to, I mean, there's blood, sweat, and tears that came along long before me. I have my own experience, but through those experiences, we get to share and be there for other alcoholics. Let's see, I have another one that's really, really cool. And this has to do with anonymity, right? This has to do with both the anonymity when we talk about tradition 11, public relations, and then we talk about our personal anonymity. Another one I really like, and then I'll probably end with this. But I'm going to see if I can find it real quick. Nope, if I start finding more hearts in my book, you guys are in trouble, then I'll never be done. But, and I'm finding them. But I love when, let's see, right here. Well, when Anne passed, and I don't want to misquote this because I know there's somebody here that can help me. But when we're looking at page 344, let me read this and see what it says here. It says, because I got a heart here, it says, the funeral service was conducted in the old Episcopal Church by Dr. Walter Tunks, whose answer to a telephone call 15 years earlier had opened the way toward bringing Bob and Bill together for the first time. This is the bottom of page 344. And you'll see a picture there off to the left of Bill at the gravesite there. It says, the funeral service was conducted in the old Episcopal Church by Dr. Walter Tunks, whose answer to a telephone call 15 years earlier had opened the way toward bringing Bob and Bill together for the first time. Dr. Bob was buried, just like other folks, in Mount Peace Cemetery. Next to him is Anne, as she was for so many years. Other than a simple headstone, there is no monument. No monument, it says in a question mark. So, and the reason I say that, because there is a piece in here, and I was just reading it the other day, but because I was in here with somebody else, it looks like I unmarked it. Oh, here it is right here. So, and this is because I don't like quoting the literature by my memory. I've got a bad memory. So on page 330, and this is referencing that his passing being buried. So on page 330, it's the second paragraph down, page 330. It says, we went to different cemeteries in different places and looked them over. When we decided on Mount Peace Cemetery, I said, surely you're going to have something on the stone about AA. And he said, mercy, no. This was a time when AA members were thinking about a monument for Anne and Bob. In fact, a collection had already been started. Hearing this, Dr. Bob promptly asked that the money be given back and declared against the fellowships erecting for Anne and himself any tangible memorials or monuments. He told Bill, let's you and I get buried just like other folks. And so with that, I'm going to just, because it looks like, I think I got like 15 minutes left, but if I don't, I'm going to finish early. I'm not going to use that 15 minutes anyway. But what I think is interesting, and I'm going to draw a liken to this, you know, if it was good enough for Bob and good enough for Bill, then why can't it be good enough for me? So it was kind of, it's sad to me, but it's also then arrogance of me to think that just because I know better, other people should know better. Just because I finally woke up to the traditions and understanding tradition 11 and 12 in a difference today that I didn't understand it for so many years, because it wasn't until the last couple of years have I really understood it and reeled it home. So now when somebody puts their coin on Facebook, right? And I'm just using that as an example because it's so controversial and there's, and we're not talking, you know, we can talk about a headstone, we can talk about Facebook, but I want to talk about Facebook because if Dr. Bob had such grace and so did Bill in you can read about that and pass it on and AA Comes of Age and, you know, he refused the Man of the Year, Time Magazine, even if they just wanted the back of his head, you know, he refused the cover, he refused that, he refused the, I forget what college it was because I don't want to do that. I'll start rivalry here in the meeting about the college I choose. It'll probably be the wrong one. I think it was Yale, not Harvard, but thank you so much. And so, yeah, it was Yale. And so he refuses these things, you know, knowing that it's going to blow up our ego, not only from an individual, it's not good for their sobriety, but from a society point of view. And what happens when we fall down and get hurt? What happens when we don't get up so gracefully again and it gives Alcoholics Anonymous a black eye? See, it doesn't work. So it's important that we remain nameless and faceless as a movement. And so when I see this stuff on Facebook with the coin, you know, and I'm not getting into the details, whether it's just a coin, whether it's just the Roman numerals, the fact of the matter is that if I think that I've got to do anything like that, pat myself on the back and look at me, I know that it's just me looking for my own radio station, looking for the kudos, looking for the attagirls, you know what I mean? And if Bob and Bill didn't need that, you know, why do I, if it was good enough for them, can it be for me? And so there's true humility for me. You know, it's kind of like when you open the door for somebody, if they don't say thank you, you know, do you say, well, you're welcome. You know, I used to do that, you know, like how rude, you know what I mean? Like everything I did was with the string attached, you know, can I just serve Alcoholics Anonymous? And can I just be one among many with grace, without any kind of like attagirls, without any kind of, you know, I don't know, blowing up my ego. And the only reason, again, I say that is because I did reference earlier, I know I'm talking about Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, but it's kind of like the traditions. It's hard to talk about one of our history books or one of our founders without talking about another because of the complement of the balance that they both gave each other. And when you look in AA Comes of Age and you find in those the papers, Harry Tebow writing about that psyche, you know, as a psychiatrist, he writes about our ego. And for me, I thought about an analogy of that ego and why that's so important that we remain a faceless, nameless movement is because my ego is like on a treadmill, naturally, humanism, not my alcoholism. That's just naturally my ego, right? You know, keeping up with the Joneses. We've been trained that way. So my ego is on a treadmill moving forward. And the only way to keep it stopped is a constant surrender. But I'm not guaranteed a constant surrender because I don't show up spiritually fit all day, every day. I get to grow along spiritual lines, not arrive along spiritual lines. So I have these tools. I mentioned 10, 11, and 12. I get to have 10 and 11 as I go through my day and make mistakes with my kids that are sitting here with their headphones in front of me doing their own thing, jamming out. But, you know, they know I'm not perfect. But because of all these things, the outside world, if we start carrying a name to this, starts the stigma between, see, it doesn't work, look what she did, look what he did, you know. We can't be all things to all people. We can't please them all. But what we can do is make sure that we look from within, right? That humility, that faith, that spirituality, spiritual sacrifice, these are spiritual principles. And so I think what's important to me through the history is to see that Dr. Bob did that, to see that Bill did that, to see that there were many others that have come before us. And yeah, they both made mistakes. I can just blow up the good stuff as I'm talking. And of course, I'm looking at the half full. There is definitely the half empty. But that's who I used to be before I got here. Today, I choose to look at the half full because that's where, you know, that's for me where love is found, you know, and that's what's kept me sober. So anyway, I know there's a lot more in here that I love, but I thought I'd open it up for sharing. And thank you for asking me